second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundy. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. You can get anything you want when it comes to John Deere. Just give them a call. And they've got tractors, mowers, zero turns, implements, parts service. They do it all up there. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard. Or give them a call at 530-226-9226. I'd love to hear from you. And now's a good time to get in there and get your winter service done before you really got to have it. So give them a call, or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And it costs extra if you fix it yourself.
Yes, it does.
It
costs extra if you tell them how to fix it, too.
I got you that great sign. We have to bring the great sign.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Yeah.
Okay, so and let's see. Free advertisement of the week goes to my friends at Shasta Pizza. I haven't seen them in several weeks, but Shasta Pizza over on Victor, if you live here in town, you should go have them make you a pizza. They're the best, and they're the nicest. I never call them. I go in. I can't bear to be one of those people who's making their phone ring all the time. I got to go in and order. Sad. And that might be happening later today. Spoiler alert. I might be going by later today. Oh, my goodness. So, our guest this hour is the same as our guest last hour, actually. If you missed the first hour, you better tune back in. So, you know, not to put too fine a point on it. But topics like this are things that we like to cover because you just can't do it in a minute and a half. Nobody learns anything in a minute and a half particularly. And especially on this whole Ukraine thing, because it's kind of, I mean, you know, not to beat the war analogies in the head, but it's kind of a minefield.
Well, everybody has an opinion on it, and that's what it is, it's opinion. And so few people have facts on what's really happening over
there. But, like we talked about last hour, you know, you've got the commentators and you've got conservative commentators. It isn't just a... Like, Stephen, on this as a... it's a terrible question, but I'm asking it anyway. On like a left-right issue, like, is there even such a thing, or is this just like a big marble rye?
Oh, that's a terrible question.
Shut up, Bill. I wasn't asking you. I was counting on Stephen being too nice to call me on it.
I guess it's, you know, I look at it this way. So, you know, freedom is one of my most important personal values. And, you know, after 2001, I spent 3.5 years in Muslim countries as a civilian trying to help them figure out how to use, you know, words to solve their problems other than guns and bombs. And you can argue about how effective that was, but
I
gave it a shot, right? And so now, yeah, I have the Arabic word for freedom tattooed on my leg. And so...
what does it say? So good luck? Is it like the equivalent of good luck?
Well, they told me it was the Arabic word for freedom, but, you know, I don't speak Arabic, so it could be anything. But for me... This is a freedom value. These people in Ukraine have been trying to shake off the yoke of Russia since, you know, for three decades since they gained their independence, and you know they're finally doing it, and it's costing them lives, and it's a terrible thing. But they're not showing any cracks in their resolve. You know, my friends in Kyiv are getting hit by missiles most nights, and you know, I asked them, "You guys doing okay? You know, is everybody still, you know, how's it affect morale?" And they're like, "You know, it just really makes us angry, and so we are all united in our resolve because we're angry that this is happening, and so Ukrainians have no choice but to fight. And why should the Americans care?" And that's a good question. You know, we've got a lot of people coming to our southern border. I like the Mike Gallagher piece that was at the top of the hour. And yeah, the southern border is super important. And, you know, and 3/4 of Americans want something done about increased border security, including 54% of Democrats. So this should be an easy thing for Biden to do, increase border security. Why it's not, I don't know. But what's also happening is that we can't, you know, if America pulls back from the world does not get to be a better place. And most Americans are living under the illusion that we can choose whether or not to participate in wars in Europe and the Middle East.
And oh, I'd say that's totally true. People do think that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we saw in World War II, you know, the oceans were not big enough to keep us from getting involved in those wars. And those oceans are metaphorically much smaller now because the world's much more interconnected. And, you know, we can either send weapons to our allies in Ukraine and Israel who are willing to fight and die for their freedom. You know, we can send them weapons, you know, now, which is relatively inexpensive, or we can send troops in 2, 3, 5 years, and which is going to be expensive in so many ways, you know? So
pay now, pay later, right?
Yeah.
Kind of that same sort of idea.
Yeah, and if you're a fiscal conservative, as I am, here's, you know, think about it in this perspective, is that since 2000, I did the math on this, when Putin took power in 2000, we have spent $14 trillion in the U.S. Department of Defense. So in that 23 years, we spent $14 trillion on our national defense. Now, what percentage of that was to deter Russia? I don't know, because they don't break it down that way. But let's say it's 20%. So that's $2.8 trillion that we've spent to deter Russia in the last 20 years. And now compare that to the $42 billion in weapons that we've sent to Ukraine. And again, as I mentioned in the last hour, the Ukrainians have pushed back the Russians 800 miles. They've taken back all but 17% of their territory. And intelligence estimates say that the Ukrainians have degraded Putin's warfighting capability by 60 to 70%. So this $42 billion is by far the most effective money that we have spent to deter Russia since the Cold War, at least, you know, since the Reagan era. So, it is well spent money. It is effective in deterring Russia. None of our children are dying. So I just would hate to see us. If we stop sending weapons to Ukraine, you know, the international coalition that is supporting Ukraine will unravel because it takes American leadership. The Russians will at some point roll through Ukraine, and they'll be on the doorstep of a NATO country like Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. And Putin has said Poland or the Baltic countries are next. And so it's going to get uglier.
Yeah. In the beginning of, you know, when they first went into Ukraine, the United States was obviously one of the biggest contributors to aid, and the EU is kind of standing off watching. Have they really stepped up much and participated in their own defense now, or do they see the danger down the road?
Yeah, there's an organization called the Kiel Institute, KIEL, in Germany, and they track all the all the aid that's been sent to Ukraine. And sometime last summer, the Europeans exceeded the Americans as the largest donor to Europe. Yeah, and if you look at
we're not hearing.
You know, if you know how to use Google, it should take you 3 or 4 minutes. Here's the other thing to think about is that a lot of people think that, I've heard this on Capitol Hill, I've heard this from members of Congress, that Putin will never invade a NATO country. Well, that's not what the NATO countries who are on his list say, right? You've got, Finland is joining NATO, Sweden is joining NATO, that weren't NATO members before. You've got Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, and Poland, who on a per GDP basis have, like, given 5 to 6 times more than the Americans have. So if you are one of those NATO countries that's right next to Russia or Ukraine, you know, and you see the Russians, the Russian bear coming up to your doorstep, you're doing everything you can to help Ukraine.
Sure.
Yeah, because you need them rolling onto your porch like you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's really prepared for that. So we have we have somebody here who has family comes from Ukraine, and she had asked me in the last hour, and I fumbled the ball and didn't ask you, but there's some big brouhaha trend. I think it's obviously has hit social media that the and I don't know that. I don't know how to pronounce the name, but Grunkevic or Grunkevich stole like $3 million from the army that was supposed to be for aid and that sort of thing. And so people are kind of up in arms about that. Is that pretty common, like things like that, to have them coming, you know, have that kind of thing come out?
I'm aware of 3 cases I'm aware of 2 cases before this one. I wasn't aware of this one, so I'll look it up. There is, I'm not saying there's not corruption in Ukraine, but
well, there's corruption everywhere. You know, so we would all be lying if we said there wasn't any somewhere else, right?
Yeah, I mean, think about it this way. You know, no matter what side of the aisle you are on in America, you think that someone on the other side of the aisle is, you know, completely corrupt and needs to go to prison, but is not, right? And so, and
if you were honest, so you know that it's kind of everywhere. I mean, it's not everyone, but to say that it's not possible, that's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And here's what I would say is that there was a Ukrainian Supreme Court justice that was corrupt, and he is now in jail, and nobody in Ukraine, you know, prior to the war, no one thought that would ever happen. But, you know, there's I think it's the Chief Justice of the Ukrainian Supreme Court is in jail because of corruption. There was a scandal over $33 million worth of winter jackets that was shipped to Ukraine. This is some months ago, and that they were, the price was inflated. And so Zelensky fired the defense minister and 6 of his deputies. So there's a new defense minister now because of this $3 million corruption issue. And so, you know, is there corruption? Yeah. But has anyone at the Pentagon ever been fired for the $400 toilet seat or the $600 hammer?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't get me started on the VA.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So what's happened in Ukraine is that they are firing people. People are getting fired for these things.
Do you think, just based on what you've been watching since you were there, I mean, 5 days in, you've been watching it longer than the average person, do you think, just in your, you know, I mean, if it was your war to orchestrate, do you think Zelensky has been effective as a communicator? Not necessarily strategist and all around everything, but do you think he was the right guy for the job at the time?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think you got to remember if Biden said, "Hey, listen, we can get you out of Kyiv," and he said to Biden, "I need ammunition, not transportation," and so if he had said something else, then the Russians would be in control of Ukraine right now. And the resolve that he showed early on is the reason that the Ukrainians are still in this game. And so, yeah, I think he's a very good leader. Now, lately, as the war's drug on, I think he's been kind of off message on some stuff. excuse me. But, yeah, so, but I think that overall he's done a good job.
Yeah, I know that was that was the thing at the beginning. It's like, well, he's a comedian. He's not a world leader. I mean, who is this guy? And
have you ever seen Bedtime for Bonzo?
Seen what?
Bedtime for Bonzo.
Oh yeah,
Bedtime for Bonzo. Yeah,
is a
Ronald Reagan movie where he's like fathering a monkey named Bonzo. there's a long list.
It's not the it's not the first time somebody came from a different genre. How about that? But I know that I know that was a kind of a at first it was kind of a novelty and then became sort of a way to marginalize. I think in some circles. We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I don't want to get into the last 2 seconds and talk about your project. We really need to doing a terrible job, all of us sick people, promoting your Ukraine Freedom Project. So when we come back, how about let's move into the shameless promotional part of the program.
I love shameless promotion.
We do too. We love shameless promotion. We're just off our game today. Sorry. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Probably part of your tattoos, dude. The side of paradise, you know. So, talk to us about Ukraine Freedom Project. We know how you started it, but like, how does it operate? What do you guys do? How do people help you? Why do they help you?
Yeah, good question. Thank you for that. And here's what we did. Basically, I got over there. And I started trying to help my Ukrainian friends out of hotspots like Kyiv and Kharkiv. And I started realizing that the international community, big organizations were not doing what they needed to do at the beginning of the war. And so I'll give one quick example. A friend of a friend called me from a hospital, a small clinic outside of Kyiv. And he said, hey, we're taking war wounded. And we're not set up for that. You know, think of like a mini clinic as anyone in America has. It's like, you know, we're taking war wounded. We need medical supplies. Can you help us? And I was like, I don't want to go to the front. It's like, where's the Red Cross? And he's like, who? And so the International Committee of the Red Cross has really fallen short in Ukraine. So I got, I put about $6,000 of the medical supplies into a truck and drove them up to the front. And sure enough, there's nothing up there from any of the, UN or the International Committee of the Red Cross or any of those folks. And so I started just, the credit card bills mounted, I started raising money. And so we've raised about $600,000 for humanitarian aid, and we have gotten about $1.2 million worth of stuff to the front for that. And, what we've gotten good at is we've gotten good at finding in-kind donations and getting them to Ukraine. As one example, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I'm from, we're working with Medical Networks International, which is a branch of the Rotary Clubs, and they're getting us containers full of pre-owned medical equipment that we're sending to Ukraine. And each container is about $1 million worth of goods, and it cost us $17,000 to get them over to Ukraine. So, with that sort of a multiplier effect, we can provide really good value for our donors.
Nice. And
yeah.
And so where does that fit in the, like, how do you make that make sense with what our government is doing? Because they're not doing the small stuff, right? They're doing the big stuff.
Yeah.
Give people kind of that landscape.
Yeah. So our contribution to this war is relatively small compared to, like, in Afghanistan, we're spending $330 million a day just in military aid. And we are spending, our contribution is something like $30 million a day. So it's like a tenth of what we're spending in Afghanistan. And again, I want to emphasize, for that amount of money, the Ukrainians have degraded Putin's war fighting capability by 60 to 70%. But what happens is that not all the aid that needs to, you know, again, they're holding crowdsourcing. They're crowdsourcing things like helmets, body armor for the soldiers. And now the big organizations have now gotten their act together and now are providing a lot of aid. But, you know, but what we're doing is it's not everything. And I have personally been to three different children's hospitals that have been shelled by the Russians. The Russians shell hospitals. And so sometimes, you know, you give aid to some place, you know, you give them the medical supplies they need, and the Russians blow it up. So so there's a constant need for this stuff over there. And Americans see $42 billion in weapons, and that's a big number. The next ask in Congress right now is $62 billion, I believe. And, you know, that's a big number. But when you look at the scope of this war, it's actually, and it compared to, you know, it's a fraction of what we spent in Afghanistan and Iraq. So, so what we're doing is we're getting the small stuff over. We're getting, I know places where this stuff is needed. You know, and despite the corruption in Ukraine and, you know, and despite the inefficiencies of large organizations, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to do is I wanted to go over there and, you know, I want to know exactly where this stuff's going. So I take this stuff to the front myself in many cases. You know, we work with Ukrainian organizations that I've vetted, that I've worked with, that I trust, that have local knowledge and know where this stuff should go. So that's what I offer. I'm kind of the good housekeeping seal of approval for aid to Ukraine.
Yeah, so that you can verify where it goes, so it isn't just, you know, you're
exactly.
You're just shooting stuff out into the stratosphere.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, I think, where people become weary about all this. I mean, we've had so much money go out over so many things, and how much, you know, just random question, but how much do you think it hurt efforts like this, not knowing that they were coming, but that when, you know, you look back and you put everything in line, that withdrawal from Afghanistan and the mess that was, and leaving everything there, and the expense, the damage to our military and
absolutely.
All that, and people go, "What the hell are we doing that again?"
No, and that's the thing is, if you think as I do, if you think that the Biden administration's botched pullout of Afghanistan is the reason that that Hamas felt emboldened to go into Israel, that Putin felt emboldened to go into Ukraine. If you believe that, then wait till we pull out of Ukraine and leave them hanging. You know, what kind of message does that send to Xi Jinping? And, you know, if we had not sent weapons to Ukraine when we did, we right now would not be talking about the war in Ukraine, because Ukraine would be under Russia. We would be talking about the war in Taiwan, because you would have seen Xi Jinping say, "Putin got away with this? And, you know, I can do this." And now, think about this. If after 2 years, the international coalition supporting Ukraine dissolves because U.S. leadership goes away, then Xi Jinping is going to say, you know, all I got to do is wait 2 years. If I go into Taiwan and the world will forget about it, I can make that deal. So, and again, Americans are living under the illusion that we have a choice whether or not to participate in these wars. And, you know, if we embolden Putin and Xi Jinping and Iran and North Korea and all these other bad actors that are working together, I mean, You've heard the stories about North Korea sending missiles to Ukraine. You've heard the stories about Iran sending missiles to the Russians to send them to Ukraine. And so all these dark forces are working together. And we're in World War III, and the only people that are acting on that information is our adversaries. So we have the choice of either doing this now, where we send weapons, which is relatively inexpensive, or we can send troops, because, you know, if Putin starts taking over more of Europe, it will really disrupt trade. If China takes over Taiwan, it will really disrupt trade. You know, I think, you know, the vulnerabilities in our infrastructure with electricity and communication and satellites are well known. And, you know, I'm sure that China, you know, the next Pearl Harbor, the next 9/11 is not going to look like that. It's going to look like an attack on our infrastructure. So the world is not that big, and we can either push back against the bad guys now, you know, with weapons, or we're going to be in a really ugly situation in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and that's a bit of a hard, kind of a hard corner for people to turn in some cases, because it's far away, seems small. It's kind of like, well, so Ukraine, a lot of the people are kind of Russian anyway, so, you know, what the heck if they all just become Russians again? I'm, of course, being kind of glib about it, but I mean, that's kind of a, like, I mean, you know, Americans speak one language, you know, we don't get out much. We tend to be kind of dopey on the world stage there a little bit. And so you got all the guys telling you that, well, this is a ton of money, they can't win anyway. That's a biggie. Okay, so I got two things for you here in the end of this. One's quick here. I had somebody ask here, they wonder what you think about, what do the Ukrainians think about the people who left the country and didn't stand fight?
Yeah, well, most of the people, so here's the way it went, is that if you are a woman or a child, you can leave the country. If you are a man with three kids or more, you can leave the country. And but otherwise, if you are a male between, you know, war fighting age, and I forget exactly what the specifics of that are, you can't leave the country. And there has not been a lot of those folks leave the country. There has been some, and as you might imagine, those people are not well thought of. So
yeah,
because there's a lot of people making a lot of sacrifices.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
If the is the is there a scenario where they win? And does winning look like what we think winning looks like, or is winning just not getting crushed?
Yeah. Well, and again,
because now you're the boss of the whole thing, right? Because
yeah, sure.
You know, we've decided. Yeah, you're the boss of everything, so you know.
here's what could happen is that the Ukrainians again have taken back most of their country. When I got there, Kyiv was surrounded on three sides, and everybody in the world thought that Ukraine was going to, you know, the Russians were going to roll through Ukraine in 3 weeks. And so when you ask me, can they win, they've been winning. And I mean, here's some of the things that you don't hear about, is that the Russian Black Sea Fleet has lost 23 ships, and Ukraine doesn't even have a navy. And they have taken out the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet from the Russians. They've taken out the replacement for the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet. And they've taken out a submarine. Then they've bombed the headquarters of the Black Sea Fleet and killed many officers. So now the Russian Black Sea Fleet is hiding back in Russian territorial waters. They can't operate right now in Ukrainian territorial waters because the Ukrainians, who don't have a navy, have innovated maritime drones and have used missiles to take out the Russian ships. So another thing that's happened that no one knows about is that the Ukrainian special forces penetrated 1,000 miles into Russia to blow up two different railroad routes between China and Russia. And so the two main railroad routes between China and Russia, which are very far away from Ukraine, are both gone. And I'm sure they're repairing them, but it gives you a sense of, you know, when Biden didn't deliver the weapons that the Ukrainians needed to do their counteroffensive, they found other ways to be successful.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah, and it's funny, you don't hear those stories. I mean, I think that's news that needs to be.
We're not hearing a lot anymore. It's kind of like Ukraine, blah blah blah.
Yeah, you hear a quick little soundbite that, you know, there was an attack
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah, there's not a tremendous amount
big
of information.
You don't hear.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah. Well, that's the frustrating part for me. I've been in the United States for 2 months now because I've been spending a lot of time in Washington, D.C., talking to my former colleagues on Capitol Hill and telling them what I'm telling you. And so I'm seeing the news media here in the United States, and I'm just like, again, every story is today something blew up in Ukraine. Today something blew up in Ukraine. When Russia pummels Kyiv with missiles, it's front page news. When Ukraine destroys, you know, much of the Black Sea Fleet, no one hears about it. So it's really frustrating because, Ukraine has been winning where it has the weapons it has. It needs, so if it has the weapons, it succeeds.
Yeah.
And where it doesn't have the weapons, in some cases, it designs them. These maritime drones that are blowing up these Russian ships are innovative, you know. And you're taking a $50,000 maritime drone, and you're blowing up a $20 million ship with it. So,
that's a pretty good conversion. That's a pretty good conversion.
Exactly. So.
Worth it. Hold that thought. Let's take one last break, and then we'll follow up with you to the top of the hour. And we need to pitch this, kind of get people back in the playing field, and maybe during the break give some thought to resources that would be good for people, so they can do their own. I mean, you know, they don't have to believe all of us. They can go do their own homework. But I think it'd be useful to point folks to the right. You know, maybe just some helpful places, because obviously they're few and far between right now.
Yep.
You are listening to We the People. Our guest is Stephen Moore, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Is freedom's the answer? What is the question? Resist the advances of force and aggression, and lead to children the promise of something more. As God is my witness, I'll be a slave no more. Who's to say I can't do everything? Well, I can try, and as I roll along I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone. We'll sing it.
Upside down indeed. So, Stephen, if people were gonna go do, you know, maybe they feel like, well, gee, maybe I'm not getting the whole story, you know? Maybe there's more to this. Where would you, I know there's like a million resources, but what would you point them to, and what would you, what are the red flags for you're kind of getting hoodwinked, like you were talking about in the first hour?
Yeah, sure. Great question. Thank you. My Substack, and going back to the shame of self-promotion.
Good. Love it.
Substack, yeah, exactly. Substack.com. Stephen in Kyiv. That's S-T-E-V-E-N-I-N-K-Y-I-V. And Stephen in Kyiv. And so you can get a bunch of good stuff there. Everything I do is data-driven, based on my first-hand experience talking to people. And if, so, you know, one of the things I would say is that there's a lot of people talking about Ukraine that have never been there. And so look at people. When someone is telling you something, say, is this person using first-hand information? Has this person been to Ukraine? And if the answer is no, then they don't have any more insight into what's going on than you do.
Good point.
So look for the people that have been there or are there now, and anyone else that has not been there, you know, look at them with a grain of salt. Is that my mix of my metaphors? Look at them with a grain of salt, whatever.
We can do whatever we want.
English is a living language.
Yeah, exactly. And all the rules are never. They're only rules until they're not the rule anymore. Being homesick, you watch some of this TV and you realize in a lot of our especially our true crime stuff, we have to subtitle our own citizens. So that's a bad trend too.
Yeah, exactly. So, other folks that are doing good work out there is Jim Garrity at the National Review. He's been to Ukraine more than once, and so he is doing really good work. His coverage is quite good. There's another guy named Michael Rashawn, and he has a TV program, Rock Rashawn. That's RockRachon. He's a Polish broadcaster, and it turns out that Polish TV is the second most watched English TV program in Europe after the BBC.
Spell him again for me, would you?
Yeah, Rock Rashawn is the name of his show, RockRachon. And so he is someone that the Polish TV, obviously, they are following it very closely because
they're next door.
See themselves as next on the plate, yeah.
Yeah.
Julian Melchior at the Wall Street Journal does good work. There's the Hudson Institute, Luke Coffey, C-O-F-F-E-Y, also does really good work. And if you're on Twitter, then there's a guy named Jay N. Keeve, J-A-Y-I-N-K-Y-I-V, and Jay's a good guy. He's got 58,000 followers, and he has been in Ukraine for many years. He's American. And he puts a lot of good information out.
Oh, that's fun. See, because there are a lot of people who are willing to do the research, but, you know, it's funny. Back when we were all kids and the news was on for an hour, you know, you got an hour's worth of info. Now we have 7,000 channels that are on 48 hours a day. And, you know, then you add all the rest of the stuff to it. And so you never know who's telling the truth, who's not. And there's so much of it. People just get, I think they just, it's like a tidal wave. It's easier.
Yeah.
It's easier to walk away and go, I don't know. I think it's probably bad.
Yeah.
I think we should fix the southern border. I think we should stop giving them money. So if somebody's representative has a vote up on this issue, and somebody wanted to be, you know, proactive about this, and ask them questions and maybe advocate. What would you have them do if you were kind of doing the marching army there?
if you want to see things in Ukraine solved with U.S. weapons rather than U.S. troops, then you know call your member of Congress and tell them that. If you want to push back against the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and which I mean Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea, if you want to push back on those folks and make sure that the length of time before another major war is longer, contact your representative and tell him that, you know, you want him to support Ukraine so that American troops aren't going there later.
Okay. And for... And for those people that, we're never going to sway everybody, right? They're never going to pull everybody on this thing. But what do you think the I don't even know how I want to ask this. What do you think it's trending, I guess, since you're an observer on the ground, right? How are we trending here?
In terms of
the overall effort.
In terms of the war or in the United States or on Congress?
How about yes?
Well, so,
come on, you have 8 minutes.
Yeah. Well, here's what we got. So right now, President Biden wants to put four things into a bill and vote on them together. What's Ukraine aid, Taiwan aid, Israel aid, and border security. And, you know, what needs to happen is that the administration needs to stand up against the far left wing of its party, which is the folks that just want to let anyone and everyone come across the border for whatever reason, and which has kind of got us in the mess we are now. So this is something that should be a layup for the Democrats to vote on these things. You know, the Republicans, rightly so, are very much interested in border security. And so it should be easy to get, and most of Americans, three-quarters of Americans, are sitting on border security. So this should be an easy vote for the Democrats, and this should pass. But there's some obstacles to that. And that is, you know, can we get past the far left and get them to do a reasonable border security reform? So that's one thing that we're looking at. And what we see in Ukraine is that when you give the Ukrainians the weapons they need, they win. And we gave them the weapons they needed early on. You know, listen, I've been a lifelong Republican. I've worked for Republican members of Congress. I've worked on Republican campaigns all my life. And, I got to say, in the first year, in 2022, I had very little negative to say about the Biden administration and their ability to wage war in Ukraine and to extend the weapons that the Ukrainians needed. But they haven't done that in 2023. And so the Ukrainians have taken large swaths of land back. They've taken back all but 17% of their territory, and the Biden administration has slow walked weapons since then. And you know, it took them 10 months to get M1A1 Abrams tanks to Ukraine, and there were only like 31 of them, and these were appropriated by Congress, so it's not like controversial to send them over there. But they were promised in January, and they arrived in October. What is the job of the U.S. Department of Defense if not to get weapons to a war zone quickly? And similarly, we're taking the slow route on the F-16s. There's a guy named General Breedlove, and he's a great guy. I'd urge your listeners to listen to him. He used to be the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. And General Breedlove says that if you're a NATO commander and you were undertaking the counteroffensive like the Ukrainians undertook, you'd want air superiority, artillery superiority, and you'd want numbers superiority. And the Ukrainians did not have any of those, and yet they tried it because they have no choice. And why didn't they have those? Because the Biden administration has been slow-walking weapons. And it's been a weird thing with the Biden administration, is that they don't send the weapons quickly, and then they criticize the way that the Ukrainians are fighting. And, as of July of last year, the Ukrainians had only gotten 15% of the mining equipment they had requested. And so, why is that? I don't know.
What is the purpose of that? I mean, what's the advantage there? What do they get from that?
Well, the general sense of things is that the Biden administration doesn't want Ukraine to win. They want Ukraine not to lose. Mm. And so because
those are different.
Yeah, exactly. The idea is that we have to prop up Russia for some reason, and I don't really get that. But they're afraid of Russia losing, and so so you know, it's Kissinger also said these sort of things. I don't really understand it, but so the idea is that so right now what's happening is that the Biden administration is dribbling out weapons, and you know what you've got to remember is that Putin is a bully. Putin is a thug. Putin doesn't understand diplomacy. Putin understands strength. If he's stronger than you, he will take advantage of that. If he is, you know, if you come to and negotiate with him, he will tell you what you want to hear, and then he'll do what he's going to do anyway. And, you know, Putin is already in violation of, you know, half a dozen treaties and a couple of dozen ceasefires in Ukraine. So the idea that we can negotiate a peace with Putin is absurd, because we've been doing that for about 20 years, and he is in violation of multiple agreements, peace agreements and ceasefire agreements. And so what happens is if we, you know, again, I've told you that, that Putin's warfighting capability has been degraded by 60 to 70% at this point. And, but he's got, he's now gearing up his economy to replace that. And so if we give him, say, a two-year hiatus, he's just going to build back his forces, and he's going to come at it again, because Putin wants to reinvigorate the Russian Empire. He wants to reunite the Soviet Union. And so...
Yeah, which seems a little transparent, but it seems pretty clear. I mean...
Yeah.
Do you think that
you got it.
The reason they don't want Russia to lose is there may be somebody worse waiting in the wings to take his place?
It would be hard to be worse than Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, I agree.
I think, yeah, and you know, and people say that, and I think there's a small, you know, I mean, how could Putin get any worse? He's already trying as hard as he can to take over Ukraine, and he's already said that, that Europe is next. And you know, there's a question: will he use nuclear weapons? And you know, and I'm, if he uses nuclear weapons, Kyiv is probably one of the first targets. So I am quite literally staking my life on the idea that he's not going to do that. And and here's why: China has told him not to do it, and. You know, it's one
hopefully
thing if you use nuclear weapons. What's that?
I said, hopefully that counts.
Yeah.
Gosh, on that perilous note, Stephen, we're getting cut off by the news.
All right. Well, so, it's been fun. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thanks for coming on, Stephen.
We really appreciate it. Please come on with us anytime, and anybody else you think needs to get their message out, love to have them.
Yeah.
The commercial-free archive is available for your use in, and all that here this afternoon. You can find it at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Thanks, Stephen.